Welcome back, friends. You're listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. This is a podcast that helps you love your actual life so that you don't need to run away from home. We believe that perfection is nonsense and peace is a perspective shift away. This week I had a perspective shift. So I mentioned that we have a condo that we are renting out and we've been doing all the things to get it ready. And I don't know if you've noticed this with your husband, if you're married, but my husband tends to prioritize different things than I prioritize. So basically he's wrong about what he thinks and I am right, but I just have to convince him that twinkle lights on the patio are just as important as fixing the leaking downstairs faucet. Who cares about a leaky faucet, right? I know you're on my side. I can just sense it in my soul. Thank you for nodding in agreement. Anyhow, so I'm having to have a perspective shift because things are not quite exactly perfect at the house, but I really want everything to be just so. And I get a little wound up about it. And so I'm trying to like let it go and just calm the dadgum heck down about it. So anyhow, it's kind of a perspective shift in progress. But I hope that you are seeing more and more perspective shifts in your own life. Because the more we practice, the better we get at it. In this episode, my guest is Emily Honey, and she has wisdom on how to grieve well. But don't worry, it's not all sad. You don't have to just turn it off because this doesn't sound like a fun time. We still have a fun time, so calm down. Let's go ahead and get started. Hey, Emily, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Emily?
I'm so good. And you live in Dallas, outside of Dallas.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I live so close to where you live. I'm friends with your neighbor.
What?
Yes, I go to church with her at the Heights. So,
what neighbor?
I'm doing Ashley.
Yes.
Yes.
I love
so
her.
I've been to her house. So I've been
that's
by
so
your house.
Funny. Oh my gosh, that's really funny.
Yes. So I do live in the Dallas area.
All right. Okay. So tell us about yourself. Who are you? Who's your family?
Yes. So my name is Emily. My last name is Honey. It does not look like that. So
it really doesn't.
H-O-N-E-A. I married into it, so I didn't, you know, choose how to pronounce it. But I always just say Emily Honey rides a pony because then people remember that.
Yeah, they
so,
do.
You know, that's me. I'm married to Jeremy and he's from Louisiana also.
Oh, how
like
fun.
Your husband. Yeah. He's from Shreveport though, not South Louisiana, but his grandma's first language was French. So he's good really Cajun cool. stock.
Love it. So is crawfish like a really big deal to him as well?
Yes. Yes. He loves boiled crawfish. I'm okay with it. I don't hate it, but I don't like, it's a lot of work for what it is to
it
me.
Is so, and so many eyeballs so. Looking at you. I
it's
can't.
True.
Anyway. So you have two boys.
Yes.
Accurate? Okay.
Yes, two boys. Owen is 5 and Lincoln just turned 4. So they're 20 months apart.
Oh, man.
So they are high energy. But
okay. And so
a lot of fun.
You've been home for a really long time. But I guess they weren't really the 5-year-old was going to go to school or not even yet.
No, his birthday's in October. So he's starting kinder this fall. But we had already planned on homeschooling. So it wasn't, yeah, it wasn't like, at least for kinder, it wasn't like, oh no, what are we going to do about kinder? I was like, oh, well, we're just maybe not going to join a co-op this year or whatever.
Okay, good. You know? Well, I'm glad that it wasn't astronomical.
Yeah. But we do have a lot of friends who are trying to figure that out. And that's such a hard decision, especially sending your first one. Like, that's hard.
I bet it would be at that. Yeah.
Yeah. With a kindergartner. I think probably like with older kids, it's not as, like people just want to know, but it's not like as stressful. So
yeah. Okay.
But yeah.
So you told me that your largest motherhood surprise is how selfish you are.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it.
No, I really didn't. And it's funny because like we were some of the last people in like our friends and our small group at church and stuff to have a baby. And one of our friends had said something like, you know, just peels back another layer of selfishness or shows another layer of selfishness or something like that. And I was like, whatever. I'm like, so nice. I am really nice. And I like babies. And I like, you know, I would hold other people's babies all the time. It's very different when you're the one that they get passed off to.
Yes.
When they're crying or poopy or, you know, whatever. So yeah, I just really struggled with that, especially because my first was a really hard baby. So his birth was a little traumatic for me. So we were going to do like a natural birth. I was in labor for 17 hours and then we couldn't find his heartbeat. So I had to take an ambulance ride to a hospital.
Yeah. So that goes out the window.
Yeah. So it was and I didn't have any drugs in me. So they had to anesthetize me completely. And, you know, I didn't get to meet him till the next day. That's like they got him out. Yeah. He was fine. And, you know, it was actually, it was a really cool moment when I realized things were going wrong, actually, because I thought I could lose this baby today. And I just heard the Lord say, no. And I knew everything was going to be fine. My husband was, you know, I couldn't communicate that because I was having contractions, but my husband didn't know that until after. And so like I went in the ambulance totally at peace, like just knowing like it's going to be fine. Like this labor is over. This baby's going to come out. He's going to be okay. But it did leave some like scarring on my emotions in that I had pretty hard postpartum anxiety. So he was in the NICU for a couple days, which is nothing compared to what some people go through, right? So some people are there for weeks and weeks and months, and we did not have that. But
that doesn't mean it's not incredibly traumatic.
Right. So it was definitely just traumatic for us. So then when we got home with him after a couple weeks, realized I was nursing him and realized he had an intolerance to all dairy, like casein, whey protein.
Okay.
So, I was very stubborn. So instead of like trying formula, I was like, I'm cutting out all dairy. And so I would just cry and eat scrambled eggs every day. Oh, I didn't know what to eat that didn't have cheese in it because all I ate was cheese. So yeah, I would just make scrambled eggs, which I hate. I don't like scrambled eggs. And I would just eat them and cry because I was so hungry because I was breastfeeding.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I got really good at reading labels and finding dairy-free things and that kind of thing. But found out that he had that issue because he was just crying all the time. Like inconsolable. My first day home alone with him, he cried for 3 hours straight. Like he wouldn't eat. He wouldn't sleep. Like I was holding him like, I just walked around the house and we both cried for 3 hours. So,
I do remember those early days where you're just like, both just sobbing, wondering what exactly have you gotten both of you into?
Yes, exactly. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to help this child. So we finally figured it out and it was just, you know, up and down. But I think through that whole, like, especially him being hard and having the postpartum anxiety, like I could not sleep when he slept. People are like, sleep when the baby sleeps. I would just lay there even at night and just look at the monitor and be like, is he breathing? Is he alive? I think that's one of like the trauma or whatever post-traumatic things that I had from his birth was just like, I knew in his birth, he was going to be fine. But then when we got him home, I was like, oh my gosh, is he going to make it now? Like, are we going to keep him alive?
aren't typically anxious.
Well, you know,
you are.
No, I am.
Okay.
But that was just an escalation of like any anxiety I'd ever had before. Like I'd never had so much trouble getting rest because of anxiety before.
Okay. So what helped?
So really just time for that. Like I didn't realize I had postpartum anxiety until I had my second son. I had postpartum depression. And I was like, oh, that's what that was before. Like I didn't know. Until I realized that I had postpartum depression after my second son's birth. So yeah, just time and like being able to get my first son to finally sleep through the night and things like that and being able to get the rest that I needed and know that he was okay with that. So then when I had postpartum depression and realized that I had postpartum anxiety before after my second son, like I did counseling and was able to I was open to meds, but my counselor didn't think I needed them. And looking back, I don't think I did either, but was able to work through some of like just this trauma that first birth had left on me because it was just so unexpected and that kind of thing. But in all of that, I realized like, I feel like I deserve sleep. I feel like I deserve to go to the bathroom by myself. Like, I feel like I deserve to eat without someone taking food off my plate, you know, and I don't necessarily deserve those things. I like those things. I want those things, but it's just a season for people, you know, busting into the bathroom while I'm peeing. Like, it's just a season. And God's really taught me that through a lot of those things. And just and through the book, I think I mentioned it, Grumpy Mom Takes a Holiday.
Yeah, you did. I wanted to talk about it.
It's so good. Oh my gosh. I probably need to read it every year because there's these 10 lies. Basically, it's Valerie Warner. She's the author. And she takes 10 lies that culture tells us about mothering, like the only way to get through it is with like chocolate or wine or coffee, you know, is one of them. And she just refutes it gently with scripture, basically, and says, like, basically talking about how God has called us to just abundant life and motherhood and how he's given us the children that we have, like we're the best mom for them. And so it was just really helpful to me to read that book. I think maybe it came out last year. I don't know, but I read it twice already since I've had it because it's just such a good reminder that I am a mom right now to these two crazy boys for a reason. And God gave them to me in the right time. My second son was a surprise. God gave them to me when we were supposed to have them. And it can be really hard to remember all those things, but it's just such a good reminder to know, like, this is where God wants me right now. These little crazies are who he has me to be their mom.
Mm-hmm. And 'cause we have an enemy who wants to take us out and tell us, like,
yeah,
not only maybe, I mean, I think, yeah, he does it in a couple different ways, but either we're wrong for them or they're wrong for us.
Right. Yes, definitely. And I've felt wrong for them a lot because they're super high energy. My husband is super high energy. He's this Enneagram 7. He like basically has to exercise every day or he's like jittery, has so much energy. And I'm like, let's all sit down and rest. Like,
yeah.
That's how like my tendency is. So I'm an Enneagram 6, much lower energy, much higher anxiety, all kinds of stuff like that. And so just having little boys that have a lot of energy, I'm for a while, especially I was just overwhelmed. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't keep up with them. Like I can't.
When you're a small business owner, every minute matters and every dollar counts. So why are so many of us still using big banks that charge us all kinds of fees? I know when I first started my small business, I had to make an appointment. I had to drive to a bank. I had to wait days for the account to be approved and set up. I'm a pretty type A person and I like to accomplish things without wasting time. I love Aslo's quick setup so that you can get your small business set up fast and focus on things that really inspire you. Aslo is a free business checking account with invoicing, bill pay, money transfers. There's no minimum balance and there's no fees. I really wish I would have known about this when I first started my small business. Plus, instead of seemingly endless waiting on the phone like you experience at a traditional bank where you're still required to go in person, just go to azlo.com and apply in as little as 10 minutes. With Aslo's free instant funding feature, you can deposit money and access it in your account instantly. No waiting. Money Magazine called Aslo the best business banking option for freelancers and entrepreneurs. And I recommend Aslo because you'll never be charged maintenance or overdraft fees, and there's no ridiculous phone system. It sounds magical to me. Sign up right now with no minimum deposit at aslo.com/MSW and get a free copy of Aslo's Small Business Starter Guide, spelled azlo.com/MSW, and sign up with a free Small Business Starter Guide and no minimum deposit. aslo.com/MSW. Has your tolerance increased or have you, like, I just wear earplugs when things get too loud. Like, what do you do that kind of helps them be able to still be them?
Yeah. So I kind of tune them out, I think now. Like, I just, like, I'll listen to podcasts like you guys or whatever else. But also I think I've just, maybe my tolerance has increased. Like I've, especially since I have my second son, exercised a lot more because it's one of the things that just really helps with depression is exercise. And it's one of the things that my counselor that I first went to was like, make sure you're eating because I'm not someone who loves eating. Like I don't have an eating disorder. I know you work with eating disorder people. I do eat, but yeah. I don't like love it. I'm not like, ooh, I can't wait to have a snack. I'm like, I'm hungry. I should definitely eat something.
Yeah. And so it is interesting because a lot of people don't realize that there are people who are just like, it's a chore.
Right. That's how I feel. I'm like, it's whatever. I like a good meal, but it takes so much work. So just making sure I'm eating well, making sure I'm like taking vitamins and making sure I'm exercising. And exercising has really increased like my energy and my endurance to like play with them. So I can, you know, play rough with them because they're rough, and I can wrestle with them and, you know, run around with them and that kind of thing. I've also just gotten creative in like, if they're being crazy, how to get their energy out. So like, just I'll send them outside. It doesn't matter how hot it is. I'll be like, okay, you got to go outside for 30 minutes. Like, you can't play inside anymore. You're being too rough. You're being too loud. Go outside. And they'll just stand at the back door and whine. But
isn't
whatever.
That amazing?
Yeah.
It's like, if it wasn't their idea, they're not having
right.
it.
Yeah, they're not in. So, or I'll just take them like, to a park or to go swimming, or, you know, just try and come up with a game where they have to run. Like, so maybe I'll be like, okay, we're going to time and see who can run the fastest around the house. Okay, go. So that way, if, you know, it's too hot or if it's too cold or rainy or whatever, that way they can just get the energy out. Cause it's like one thing I've learned from my husband is he just needs to get energy out. And so these tiny boys, they just have all this energy. They just need to get it out. And so I just try and come up with ways to get them to get it out. Like, if I'm exercising at home, I try and get them to do it with me. I'm like, okay, everybody do push-ups. Okay, everybody do jumping jacks.
Yeah. My mom used to do obstacle courses for us in the yes. front yard.
Yes.
And I thought it was just her being fun, but it's probably her being like, listen,
everybody
you lunatics.
Worn out. Yes. Yeah. She's a genius. My husband is so funny because he's, like I said, Enneagram 7, so he's so creative. So he'll like mow paths in the yard.
No
like,
way.
So like, yes. So he's like, they're all swervy and stuff. And like, he'll make the kids run laps around them. And they think it's awesome. Where it's
that
really just
so fun.
Him wearing them out. Yeah, he's the funnest. I so needed him. He's so fun.
That's good. Okay. So you said that you, something that's driving you nuts right now is that you have a 3.5-year-old who won't potty train.
Yeah.
And you've tried all the things.
Yes. So he's 4 now.
Okay. And, still no potty training?
Let's put it this way. He'll still have at least one accident every day. However, we're having some poop struggles for a long time. He just didn't want to do it. And I really don't know what triggered it. Like if there was like, well, I don't know what happened, but he would just not poop. Like he would just hold it. And the doctor was like, give him Miralax every day. And so I would try like anything to try and get like any reward. I also tried disciplining, which I know you're not supposed to do. Please don't send me hate letters because I did that. But I was just at my wit's end about like, what do I do? And so finally one day he was like, can I play on your phone after I go potty? And I was like, yes, you can. So now he goes every day and he gets to play on my phone for 10 minutes after he goes.
That's awesome.
So now he tries to go 10 or 12 times a day.
Of course he does.
Yeah. So it's like the other extreme. It's like now I'm like, okay, you can only play twice.
I don't care how much you go.
Yes.
That is so funny.
Yeah. So I would just say, hang in there if you're struggling with potty training. And he, like I said, he doesn't want to stop. He wants to keep doing it. And that's why he has an accident every day still, because he doesn't want to stop and go pee in the toilet.
It really does feel like it's never going to end in the moment. And it always does end. My son thought it was the funniest joke that I tried to make him go to the bathroom until his 3rd birthday. And then he's like, oh, yeah, I don't wear diapers anymore. And then he never went back. I'm like, what in the actual? It has nothing to do with what I did. I was trying so many things.
Yeah.
And he, yeah. Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay. So the reason I wanted to talk to you today is that so my sister, Katie, her mother-in-law passed away, and she told me that you were really instrumental in helping her talk through grief. She really just said, I want you to talk to this girl because she was so helpful to me. So first of all, thank you for doing that for my sister.
Of course. I'm so happy to be able to help. Not happy that she is dealing with grief or that anyone is, but.
Yeah. So grief is something that nobody wants to talk about. Nobody wants to go through. And if you've not gone through it and don't know how to do it, you especially don't want to talk about it because you're like, I'm sure I'm going to mess this up.
Right. Yeah. And you feel awkward about it because it's hard. We're not a culture that embraces sadness very well or embraces loss very well because we are very wealthy. We have an excess. We get whatever we want almost whenever we want usually. And so it's really hard for us in our culture, I think, to talk about grief and to know how to help others who are grieving. So
I wanted to take a minute to tell you about one of today's sponsors, Noom. Noom is the habit change program that explains how your mind works so you can understand why you make the decisions you make and feel empowered to change for good. Recently, Astrug came on and shared with us that she's working to do all or something versus all or nothing. That's what I like about Zoom. There are no rigorous plans or anything complicated to remember, and you can make small changes at your own pace. For me, I use Noom because when I'm eating better, I feel better. My personalized coach, her name's Emily, she asks the best questions to help me understand why I'm making the choices I'm making. She's a very understanding, knowledgeable, virtual ninja coach, and I love that about her. Noom has short and sweet lessons that are funny and informative. I do them in the morning, and it gives me some confidence to start the day off right. Noom will teach you about your specific eating habits and give you tools to break bad habits and replace them with better ones. But Noom isn't going to take over your life. They suggest just 10 minutes a day. If you need more than a one-on-one specialist, you also get access to a community of Noomers. Did you know that 80% of Noomers finish the program and over 60% stick with their goals for at least a year? There's a science to getting healthier. It's called Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, that's Noom.com/MSW. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/MSW to start your trial today. That's Noom, Noom.com/MSW. You guys already know about my favorite bra from Third Love, but I'm gonna tell you about it again. Why do I love my 24/7 classic t-shirt bra so much? Because it's super comfortable and flattering. Third Love uses the measurements of millions of women to design bras with all-day comfort and support. Third Love has bras in over 80 sizes, and every Third Love bra is made with signature memory foam cups, no slip straps, and a scratch-free band. I wasn't 100% sure of my size, so I did the Fit Finder quiz, which is actually pretty fun, and it took less than a minute to complete. Third Love has a perfect fit promise, and they stand behind their products. If you don't love it, you have 60 days to return it with Third Love's free and easy return and exchange policy. They'll wash it and give it to a woman in need. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering my listeners 10% off of your first order. So go to thirdlove.com/MSW now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 10% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/MSW for 10% off today. So talk to me about, you know, your experience with grief, how that became something that you sadly are an expert at.
Oh, well, you're sweet to call me an expert. I wouldn't say I'm an expert. And there are definitely people who have lost, whose losses I would consider more difficult than mine. And wow. I haven't like researched it, a ton. But I mean, I have done some research, but I'm not like an expert. I have experienced loss. So when my youngest was almost one, my dad was diagnosed with a terminal brain tumor. So glioblastoma multiforme, which if you know anything about brain tumors, which you probably do because you're a nurse, those are like the nastiest brain tumor. Our neurosurgeon said they don't play by the rules. So if you picture like most tumors as like a ball that have like a membrane, glios aren't like that. So a glio is like a ball, but fingers. It's like got fingers, yeah, coming out of it. So it goes into the brain and they can never surgically remove all of it without damaging good brain tissue. So he was diagnosed like 3 days before my son turned one. And my family, I'm from Oklahoma, so my family all still lives in Oklahoma. So we drove up there not knowing how long we would be there, not knowing like if he would live to the end of the week. Like, I don't know anything. I'm not a nurse. I had never heard of that before. My dad was a chaplain at the hospital for almost 20 years. And so he knew immediately.
With hospice, right?
Yeah, with hospice for like, I think 8 years before that. And then with at the hospital, he worked ICU, he worked ER, he worked everything but like NICU, postpartum labor and delivery. So he had worked all
this.
It's
got to be really interesting to work in hospice and then know that you have a terminal diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah. So when they went to the ER, because he was not having, like, he didn't have any seizures. That's normally the first symptom with any kind of brain tumor. He never had a seizure. He had like a low grade fever and headaches and like was getting more and more disoriented. So they finally went to the ER. A good friend of ours who's a PA, my mom called him and was like, what should I do? Should I take him to the ER? And he was like, it's been going on for 6 weeks. You need to take him and get a CT scan just to make sure, just to rule out brain tumor. So they did, and it did not rule it out. It showed it that it was there. So we went up there and it's just really cool looking back how God's hand has been in this whole thing, because my dad did work at that hospital for almost 20 years. So he knew so many people. And my mom worked there as well for like 6 or 7 years. So they knew so many people there. In fact, they had to put his room number like on private because like they couldn't get any rest because people just kept coming by, and like people just loved him there because he was just Chaplain Byron. Everybody loved him. So it was kind of neat because my mom had started working there because they wanted to have a ministry to the staff there. And so through having this, they got to show the staff what it's like to die as a believer, which no one wants that to be their ministry.
No.
But they did all their treatment there. They knew, you know, the neurosurgeon already, sweet, sweet guy. And he was just awesome. And he's not a believer, so able to just talk about the Lord to people. And, you know, as a neurosurgeon, you see people act all kinds of ways about having a brain tumor. And he was just like, you know, I've never seen people respond in such a like peaceful, joyful way. We're obviously not happy about it. And we're very, very shocked, but just able to trust the Lord through it all. I remember that night that we got there, I got to have a few minutes alone with my parents at the end of the night, like at the hospital. My husband took our kids to my parents' house, and I was just there, and my dad said, you know, you remember the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? And I was like, yeah, I do. And he said, you know, they tell the king, we are not going to bow down to your idol. We are going to worship God, and he can save us from this fire. But even if he doesn't, we're going to worship him. And he said, God can save me from this, but even if he doesn't, we are going to worship him.
And they sounds like they really did.
Yeah, they did. So he had surgery because he wanted to be able to live a little bit longer, just to see like my boys and my nephews get bigger, you know, just to be around a little longer. So he had surgery, and that went well. And it's surprising how quickly people can like bounce back from brain surgery. Like he was, you know, the next day he was like talking and stuff. I mean, he had to do some therapy and stuff for motor skills, but I was just shocked. Like I had never been around someone who'd had brain surgery before. So it was just really cool because he was just himself still. And that was a huge, huge blessing. So yeah, as time went on, he did chemo, he did radiation, and things were stable for a while. So there was no, you know, regrowth up through like, that was June when we found out. So up through like November, things were stable. They said, you know, if we do nothing, you have 6 weeks. If we do surgery, you have 6 to 18 months max. So,
and so he ended up, if I'm right, it was 9 more months.
Yeah. 9 more months. Yeah. Okay. So he lived till the next March. So that was really good because we got to have, you know, another set of holidays with him. Yeah.
You had it different than Katie. You had a lead up to it. There was kind of a preparation time or whatever. I mean, so was that helpful? Was it just so painful? Where was that?
Yes, it was helpful. It was painful. I think that as opposed to like someone passing away suddenly, it was nice in that like nothing was left unsaid. You know, we could make sure that we spent a lot of time with them. We drove up there every other week, basically, to spend time with them. So I think in that way, it's easier than like a sudden death would be. But it was hard because there's already grief happening in that process. Just knowing that someone's going to die and hoping that he won't and praying that he wouldn't. My parents, though, weren't praying that he wouldn't die because they said, we are just going to pray for what God wants. We're not going to pray for him to live because if that's not what God wants, then that's not what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Gosh. I mean, I was like, you know, fervently
disagree.
Praying. I was like, I don't want that. I don't care if it's what God wants.
Yeah.
I want him to live.
Yeah.
Because my dad's awesome. Like some people, I just have been so blessed to have like amazing parents. So, which is part of what has made it so difficult, I think.
Definitely. So the stages of grief, tell me, talk to me about those. If somebody's grieving and they don't know.
Yeah.
What's even happening?
So there are five stages of grief. There's denial. And, you know, especially after someone is gone, there's this time period where it's almost like you feel like they're not gone. It's like you're in shock still. And that's pretty much just the denial, you know, stage. Then there's anger. And these don't go in any order, by the way. Like there are five stages, but it's not like, oh, I'm done with denial. That won't ever happen again. Like you could go through that more than once. You could go through anger more than once. I definitely went through anger and still sometimes go through anger just because my dad was awesome. Why should he be gone? But yeah, that's when you just feel like this is stupid. Like, why is this happening? I'm so mad about it. And this is when it's easy to be angry at God. And you know what? That's okay. He's big. He can handle you being angry at him. If you're angry at him, tell him. And he's going to comfort you because I've experienced that. Like, I would encourage anybody who's going through like the anger of grief just to tell the Lord. Just be like, this is stupid. And I'm mad at you for doing this. And he can handle it.
Yeah. Just like we can handle when our kids are mad at us. I mean, it's a relationship. It's an interaction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For sure. And he, just like with our kids, we can see more than they can. And God can see more than we can. And so he can handle it. So then there's also bargaining, like, you know, if you would just do this, then I would do this. You know, you're just trying to gain some sense of control, I think, through bargaining. Because it really feels... for me, it has felt like a big loss of control just because it's so unexpected. And then there's sadness where you just are sad and just feel it maybe even more deeply. And that's also okay. Like when I'm sad, oftentimes I'll try and like work, like I'll work in my yard or I'll, you know, try and just brush it off, but I have to let myself be sad. So I've started doing things that will let me cry when I need to be sad. So my dad played guitar and he taught me to play guitar when I was in high school, which was a big deal. Like I didn't realize it at the time, but like he was very particular. I think he was an Enneagram one. So he was very particular about things and like didn't want people, you know, to mess up his stuff.
Oh, he was the one.
Yeah. Exactly. Don't mess up my stuff. And so him like letting me use his guitar and teach me to use his guitar, like being an adult and understanding his mindset now, I'm like, wow, that was a big deal. Like he loved me so much to teach me and let me use his, you know, beloved guitar. So I got his guitar. I am not awesome at guitar. I don't really play it much now. So I'm not going to like come serenade people. It's not, you don't want that. Trust me. But so like I'll get the guitar out and I'll play it when I'm sad. And I'll let my soul cry.
Why is it that we want to like not, like we want to get so busy that we don't cry? It's so interesting that we're like afraid of that.
And I think sometimes we feel like it's wrong because we should be able to, like our culture, our society tells us we should be able to move on.
I think also I might be afraid that it won't stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it sometimes is a long time. It takes a long time for it to stop. But it's just so necessary. Like, God created us to be able to be sad, just like he created us to be able to be happy and joyful. And so we need to be able to be sad. So I'll also just like read letters that he wrote to me or things like that. Talk to my mom because I can cry when I talk to her. And if I'm being healthy, I will try to find a way to let myself be sad and just be okay with that. And it's like my boys are totally used to it. I've cried in front of them a ton. In fact, if I'm crying and it has something to do with something else, they're like, are you crying because you're sad because of Papa? I'd be like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not. but most of the time, yes, that's usually why I'm crying. And that's good too for them to see. Like, if you have littles or even bigs and you're sad, let them see you be sad. Like, they need to know it's okay to be sad and to miss someone. And there's no time limit on being sad. Like, just because it's been a few years since my dad passed away doesn't mean I'm not going to still be sad sometimes. I went to a grief share is a really awesome program. So that's free and nationwide, might be international. So if you need somewhere to go, that's a great one. You can look it up and see if it's in your area. But I went to a Surviving the Holidays class through Grief Share. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was that there's a difference between moving forward and moving on. So you can move forward and still take the memory of your loved one with you.
Because there must be some guilt about.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Oh, definitely. And moving on implies leaving something behind. Moving forward, you can take those things with you. You don't have to leave that person behind. You don't have to put their memory away. You don't have to stop being sad. You can keep doing those things just because the world says, like, you need to move on. You don't need to move on. You need to move forward, but you don't have to put those things away and never experience that grief again. So that sadness is just letting yourself be sad. And then there's acceptance, which is just being at a place where you can say, like, I know that God allowed this and even enabled this to happen, even though it sucks. And he's bringing about amazing things because of it that wouldn't have happened. It's not what I want, but it's still good. So those are the five stages. And like I said, you don't go through them sequentially. It's not clean like stages should be.
Yeah, like, no kidding.
I want it to be clean. I want to be like, okay, now I'm done with anger. Now I'm done with sadness.
Yes.
That's not how it works. You go through them. And sometimes you'll think you finish one and you'll go to acceptance and then you'll go back to anger and then you'll go to sadness and then you'll go to denial. And like, it just, they can hit you at different times in different ways.
Now, you mentioned that you recently read about a sixth stage.
Yeah.
And I wanted you to talk about that because I really liked it.
Yes, I loved that. So at the beginning of the pandemic, I read an article when everybody was being forced to shelter in place. And the title of it really stuck out to me. It was called That Discomfort You're Feeling Is Grief. And I just thought, oh, that's perfect. Like, that's spot on. And so this grief expert was talking about how in the pandemic and in sheltering in place, how our normalcy has been taken away from us. And people are just experiencing grief because of that. So grief isn't just caused by losing a person. It's caused by a loss of normalcy, a loss of financial stability, a loss of health, a loss of a particular body size. You know, it could be caused by a lot of things.
Even for me, there's been some loss about the way I thought having kids would be. Like, you know, so it could even just be an expectation that wasn't met, even if it wasn't an unrealistic expectation.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. So there are lots of things that cause grief. And it's just different levels, different amounts, probably different levels of intensity. But this expert that wrote the article, I wish I could remember his name, I can't, but he said that he did a research on it and has experienced grief himself. And through that has discovered that people also add kind of a sixth stage, which is meaning. So that when we experience loss or suffering or hardship, we want to create meaning out of that experience. And this was an article in like the Harvard Business Review. It seems unlikely to me that it was someone who's a believer. That doesn't mean they couldn't be, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't. And so I just was so excited about that because I thought, how much more as believers can God use loss and suffering to create meaning in our lives? And I can see how much God has grown me because of experiencing grief. And I have a really sweet friend who even told me, she's so straightforward. I love her so much. She was like, this has softened you. And it's true. Like I thought, like I said before I had kids and all that, I thought I was a really nice person.
it turns out you were the only one that thought that.
I know. Right? Everyone else knew I was not nice and that I was super selfish and probably pretty judgmental. But yeah, it's like God took my heart. And have you seen like those manual meat tenderizers?
No.
You know, yes. They're like a mallet, but yeah. But they're real pointy.
Pointy, uh-huh. So
it's like he took my heart and like just slammed it with the meat tenderizer, you know, during this process and has made my heart so much more tender, so much more able just to see people as hurting and in need of Jesus than just thinking like that person is wrong. They need to get their act together.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So even in that, just in that one small thing, like I can see the meaning out of Lucy, my dad.
I love that. That's funny because to me, you present as so tender and kind. And it's, I mean.
Because I am now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so great. Wow. God is always, he's in the process of restoring, even in.
Yes.
Even yeah. in death, I can't even imagine yeah. how good and big and smart he is.
Yes, yes. And it's just, yeah, it taught me so much. Like, I feel like as believers that we can really cling to this idea that grief and suffering and heartache bring about meaning because they do. Like, God tells us that he's not going to let things that happen be void. Like he's going to bring about good in everything in our lives if we've been called according to his purpose. And so we can trust that there's going to be meaning. We may not see it. We may not be able to say like, this was the best thing that happened to me, right? It's not like that, but it's a way for us to grow closer to him and bring him glory and bring him honor in ways that we wouldn't otherwise have been able to do. So.
Okay, so we're almost out of time, but I did want to ask you about what's helpful for people who don't know how to help someone who's grieving because they don't really know what to do.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things I would say is two big things. Pray about what to do for your friend who's grieving, because if you're praying fervently for them and asking God to show you what to do, he's going to show you what to do, and it might seem weird to you because what's comforting to me isn't going to be comforting to you, even though both our names are Emily. Like we're not the same person. So just pray about how to love your person well.
And then also, go with it if it seems super weird.
Yeah, go with it if it seems super weird. Because, I mean, maybe they'll think it's weird, but more likely than not, they'll really appreciate it. Don't be afraid to ask about them and the person that they've lost. Don't be afraid to make them sad. It's okay to make them sad. One of the big things that I want and that I know friends who've lost loved ones want is for their loved one not to be forgotten. So ask them like, hey, how are you doing? You know, I know that this is like Father's Day was last month. So like, hey, how was Father's Day? I know it's a hard day for you. Did you do anything or was it especially hard or, you know, just ask. And so that way they know that you're thinking about them and that you're remembering.
Yeah.
Them.
My dorm mom in high school, and her husband, he baptized me and my dad wasn't around when I was growing up and having him in my life was just really helpful, you know, and
yeah.
sweet, even just for those college years. And then he passed away of cancer and just talking to his wife and telling her what he meant to me
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, my interactions with him were for like 3 years and they were married forever. So I felt like I was on repeat saying the same things over and over, like when we talk about it, but it always seemed to help her know that he, I don't know, it felt like it couldn't possibly be as helpful as I could tell that it was when we talked. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. If you knew the person who passed away and you're able to tell stories about them or be like, hey, my best friend, she'll be like, I was doing this today and I thought about your dad because she knew him. We went to high school together. She lived with us for a while in high school. And so she knew him well. And she was like, he loved maps and he would tell you like 16 different ways to go somewhere. And she'd be like, I was thinking about your dad because this and this happened. And I was trying to find an alternate way to go somewhere. And I knew Byron would have told me 7 ways to go there, you know, that kind of thing. So yes, absolutely. Another thing that's been really sweet for me is I have a really sweet friend whose dad passed away a couple years before mine did. And she just walked through this whole thing with me when my dad was sick and when he passed away. And so what she would do is she would always, the first year after he died, she would check in with me on that date every month for the first year.
Oh, on that date every month.
Uh-huh.
Every so the month date
for
was
12 months. So the date was March 23rd. And so April 23rd, May 23rd, June 23rd, she would just check in with me and be like, hey, how are you doing? How's it going?
Like, so that day was hard every month.
Every month that date was hard for me.
Interesting. Because I would have thought just once a year would be.
Yeah. Yeah. And it might be for different people. For me, it was hard every month.
Okay.
And I think just because you feel like you're getting further away from that person, that makes it hard. And so I've had friends and acquaintances who've lost people since then. And I've done the same thing for them because it was so meaningful to me to have someone to just remember me. And this friend had never met my dad. Like, she's from here. She never went up there and met him or anything, but just because she had experienced loss similarly, just checking in and saying, hey, it's been. So what I do, because I have a paper planner, because I'm an old lady, is I write down I write down in my planner on that date, like, call this person, text this person, and just check on them. And
so
say,
easy.
Hey, like, yeah, so easy. You can put a reminder in your phone if you're not old lady like I am, and then it'll pop up and you can just text them or call them or whatever. And just, you know, dates that might be hard. I have a friend who lost his mom, who's my age. And so I'll just ask him like around Mother's Day, like, hey, how are you doing for real? And he's a pastor. So to be asked, how are you doing for real? I think means a lot to him. But my dad is a pastor. So I get that pastors are real people. So yeah, don't be intimidated by someone's like status or job title or whatever. Like, if it's your pastor, they are still a person. They're still going to appreciate you asking and really caring and not just saying like generically, like, hey, I was thinking about you. Just be like, hey, like, I was thinking about you. How are you for real?
How are you? Yeah.
And that's good. Inviting you to be real and to be sad and to remember.
That's good.
So,
thank you, Emily.
Yeah, you're so welcome.
I'm sorry that you're good at grief.
Oh, gosh.
But I'm thankful. I'm thankful for what God's done.
Yeah, me too. It's part of that meaning that he's creating. You know, it's not, I don't want to be the grief girl, but I've told God, like, if that's who you want me to be, that's who I'll be. Like, if I need to go and cry so people can love you more and see how you're using this, then I will. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for your obedience, even in the icky.
Yeah. You're welcome.
All right, ladies. I hope you love that. How are you going to struggle well this week based on what Emily said? She mentions the importance of letting ourselves go through the different stages of grief. And grief just doesn't have to be somebody died. It can just be something in your life didn't go the way you thought, and you didn't realize that you were holding on to that expectation pretty tight. I know in my life, I have not experienced the death of a loved one who was incredibly close to me, but there's been a lot of grief about, I mean, bad choices I've made, bad choices other people have made, relationships that just aren't what I thought they would be. Got all kinds of stuff to grieve about, ladies. Don't pretend like everything's great. Stop it. Anyway, so maybe you struggle all this week by letting yourself go through the stages of grief and don't kind of short circuit it because you're afraid of what's about to happen. If you have just had a bebé and you are feeling depressed or anxious and it is not your norm and it's making you feel like a little out of control, please go see somebody like Emily talked about. There is no shame in that game. And if you can't do it for yourself, do it for your sweet family. Maybe you can struggle well this week if you were trying to potty train that child of yours. Nobody knows how bad you have it. Nobody knows that this kid is refusing to be potty trained, but I promise you, just take a deep breath, put a diaper on that kid, sit him in front of Thomas the Train, and eat yourself a little chocolate, okay? Just calm down. They will eventually be potty trained. Maybe like Emily said, you struggle well this week by just reminding yourself, repeating it to yourself, write it on a note card, write it on your forehead, write it on your COVID mask, right? That you are the right mom for this kid, even when it feels like the most colossal mismatch, you know, and you're like, Lord, you say you don't make any mistakes, but have you had a gander at this matching that you did between me and this kid in my house? It's not a mistake, I promise. Maybe you get the book that Emily talked about called Grumpy Mom Takes a Holiday and take yourself a little holiday with that book. Maybe you're not currently grieving, but you know somebody who is. Emily had some great insight as to how we can love the grieving people we know well. So maybe you reach out to that grieving person and just talk about the ways that you remember the person that they're grieving the loss of. I think we can't underestimate the meaningfulness, meaningfality, how meaningful that would be. I used to be an English teacher. How impressive. All right, guys, make sure you're subscribed to the show. And next week we have like a kind of a gigantic announcement. I'm going to be talking to Katie and Rebecca at the same time. So calm down. I know that's your favorite. Let me pray for us. And then we're going to kill it this week, ladies. You can't even imagine how great this week is going to be. I can feel it. Lord, thank you for all the blessings you've given us that bring us so much joy. Lord, you love giving gifts, the best gifts to us. Lord, though when you take away those gifts, like of relationships and things, it can just devastate us. And I know that you know, because you gave your only son. And so you get it. And I'm so thankful. Hebrews says that we do not serve a God who is unacquainted with everything that we're dealing with. So Lord, I pray for the moms who are struggling this week with grief, that they would run to you, that they would not just be mad at you and how could you and whatever, but that they would find the deeper meaning that you have and the growth that you want for us who are left on this earth, even though our hearts are breaking. Lord, for the moms who are struggling with a grief that doesn't have anything to do with death, except death of a dream. First of all, Lord, the death of those dreams are not any less painful. We have a lot of griefs and they're all valid. And so, Lord, I pray that you would comfort us. You are the best at it. And I pray that you would grow our faith and grow our character so that we can give that comfort out to other people who are grieving in the future. Romans 8:28 says that you will work all things out for good for those who love you and called according to your purpose. And Lord, there is frankly a lot of stuff that I have no idea how you managed to work it out. But in my life, you are, I want to say batting 1,000, but I don't know sports. So if that's a good thing, and it means 100%, you're doing that. So Lord, I thank you that you are always, always working things out for good. And so I pray that these mamas who are discouraged right now would sense that this week. In Jesus' name, amen.